It's Susie from MERP, and I'm here with Trevor from Unearth. Welcome to Cortland.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. 20 years. Do you have a planned celebration?
We don't, actually. We toy around with the idea of a big show, but then the record just kind of got pushed back to a little bit later in the year than we had hoped for. So then we just had to do a tour. So it's... And we wanted to push the new record, so we didn't want to call it for the 20-year anniversary tour and have to play a lot of old material. So we just want to focus on Extinctions and just kind of mention it's our 20th year. Maybe we'll do a big party for the 25th.
That'll work.
Yeah.
With it being 20 years and you have relatively few members, you haven't had a lot of member changes. What do you attribute to that?
Well, it's been me, Ken, and Buzz since the start. We've had a few drummers and a few bass players as well, but I mean, we all get along, we all enjoy what we do, and the players we usually find are passionate about what they do, and they kind of get, you know, the idea of what we're about pretty quickly. And we've had fill-ins before, but then to have a guy join the band, usually we have to know that it's going to last a long time, and both Nick and Chris are awesome guys, they're true pros. Nick's now been in the band almost 8 years, and Chris over 4 years.
2012, 2014-ish, around that time?
Chris was 14. Nick, we actually asked Nick, I think it was the end of 2010, we were on tour with As Lay Dying, and we knew that we were going to part ways with our drummer at the time, Derek Kurzweil. So we saw Nick Pierce playing stuff online on YouTube, played our son Giles, and he killed it. So we hung with him at a bar, and then like, all right, let's do some demos, like just send some more demos, and we asked him to join the band.
Did he live in your town, or your
No, he lives in Seattle.
Wow, so that's pretty cool. I always wonder, when a band, you know, like Unearth needs a new member, do you go through your circle of friends or?
Derek was a friend of ours, so that was he was local. He's a friend of ours. It didn't work out with his style of playing what we were going for, so looked online and we even put out a list for like submissions. We just saw him nailing these songs, and he's an excellent drummer.
That's really cool. Metal Injection, we were talking about earlier, wrote that Unearth is a actually, it was your 2014 album, said it was a benchmark for metalcore. When you started out with Unearth, you wanted to unearth a new genre of music or a new style of music, I read, and you've done that, and you've stayed on top of the game. Why do you think that is? Do you think it's just like magic between the band? Do you purposefully try to perpetuate it forward?
We're always trying to improve. So, for instance, on this record, we wanted to take our collective sound from all, you know, our previous six records and also push it further. So we wanted to really dig into our roots and showcase the elements of the early days, because that's the sound that we came up with. That was a blend of, you know, metal and hardcore that hadn't been done before, and so we want to show where we came from and you know, all the elements since. And so it is just us trying to progress, better ourselves as players, as songwriters, and just take this sound to the next level.
It must be hard to do because there's such a, I mean, it's so saturated, that genre, and there's so many bands that are the same, so that's really great that you guys can do that. 2014's Watcher in the Rule was one of my top albums for that year, which was really cool. How did it feel when Jesse Leach did the review? Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage did it for Metal Injection.
Yeah, that was awesome of him to do that for us. I mean, we go way back with those guys. We came up together, and Jesse was their first singer, and so... Remember back in the olden days, he and I would be at the merch table, you know, because we didn't have any crew back then. I'd sell the merch, he'd sell the merch, and we'd hang out. We'd talk about lyrics and vocals and stuff, and so we go way back, so it's cool for him to reach out and do a review of the record, try to get more people to know it.
So when you put out a new record like the one that you have for 2018, how hard is it to balance playing the new stuff that you want to get out there versus what the fans want to play? Is that a hard dance to do?
It's only a hard dance when people don't know the songs yet. So this record, we already had three singles, basically, when this tour started. So we're playing those three songs and adding one more. So the reaction has been stellar. But now, with the record being out for about a week, almost a week, we notice more and more people are knowing the songs. So actually, last night, we were talking about adding even more. So we're playing four a night, four new ones. We're thinking about adding more to the set, because they're getting as good response as the old stuff. So people are knowing the words, they're losing their minds in the pit. It's been great.
I don't understand how bands can tour on a new album before the album's been released, because nobody knows it. That seems like it's such a bad model.
Well, it gets people hyped up on it, so usually you'd limit it to one or two songs, but because we had the singles out there, we could play the songs.
There was I think a critic or two that said that on the new album there were two songs that they considered to be the weakest, and they happened to be the last two on the album. The songs were No Reprise and One with the Sun. Is that, was it intentional to do, to, first off, do you agree that they're the, I wouldn't say the weakest, I've listened to it, I would, do you agree with any part of that?
I think it's in the, you know, the ear of the beholder, what which ones are strongest. We feel that One with the Sun is the strongest song on the record. That's why we shot a video for it. And Central Media thinks No Reprisal is the strongest song on the record, so we shot a video for that. That'll be up probably early next year. So it's all, I mean, it's all subjective to what people like, because we went a few different avenues in this, on this record. One with the Sun is kind of a more classic Unearthed style song. No Reprisal is definitely a more European-influenced song, so we dug from those roots more from our, you know, Scandinavian style, you know, influence that we came up with. So it's just kind of mixing around. And other songs are more hardcore, some songs are more, you know, even there's some guitar parts that are almost a little bit more, you know, new metal in leaning. And we've never gone that way before ever. And I'm not saying the new metal songs, but just there's a whole variety of influence on this record.
With taking a little bit of new metal, for instance, in this album that you've never done before, do you see a direction that this, that metalcore can go that it hasn't hit yet? And I guess part of what I'm trying to ask is, classically you have, you know, guitar, bass, drums, maybe a keyboard, things like that. That's pretty much the music or the musical instruments that are used. We've recently seen like Neo Obliviscaris that has violin, or Leprous that has the, you know, stand-up bass, or an Australian band that has like a didgeridoo. Do you see other instruments that you could ever incorporate into Unearthed?
I mean, we have a cello at the end of the last song, One with the Sun, so we've incorporated that. We don't have it live. You know, that was recorded in the studio. We could always play on a track, but you know, there's always ways to push any kind of genre or subgenre. You know, our version of it is to blend all of our collective influences together, which is a lot of thrash metal, a lot of heavy hardcore, and just make our own kind of mix of it and just push it further.
Your influences were based in American metal, thrash metal for the most part, like Megadeth and Pantera and Slayer and things like that, but also At the Gates, so some European, Swedish metal. Is that still...
That came later. So I was I first got cut into metal through thrash metal. So Anthrax and Megadeth, Metallica were my favorite bands, and Testament, and, you know, Slayer, Sepultura, all that, and Pantera. Pantera kind of changed it, because it wasn't thrash. It was more of a almost a underground, you know, hardcore ethic behind it. Vulgar came out. I was already into Cowboys, that's more of a metal record, but then that came out and kind of changed almost what I wanted to hear. And then after that record, that's when I went into underground and found a lot of like underground hardcore, like heavy hardcore, Earth Crisis and Snapcase and Integrity, just stuff like that. It was just really heavy. You couldn't really call it metal, but that's what I got into. Then a little bit later down the line, that's when I found In Flames and At the Gates. So that's just kind of the natural progression of things. And so that just worked. It worked its way into my style, and also the guitar style and everything. So, and our drummer didn't grow up with any of that. He's more like a tech guy, like a Meshuggah. That's his favorite band. So it's a whole different mix that we can blend together.
It's nice that it puts a little bit of difference in there. I did the same. I came from, you know, Slayer, Metallica, and then Pantera. I have two Pantera tattoos, and then
really?
European
gotta,
Flames.
Gotta show
is
me
my
the
favorite.
Tattoos.
I can't see them.
Oh, okay. One of those. Not the CFH.
Yeah. Nope. The writing process. Do you come to the studio completely prepared with written, complete songs? Do you come with a theme? How does that work for you?
So the music always comes first for us. So Buzz and Ken write the riffs. They put them to a drum machine. Send to our drummer Nick. He cleans them up, puts his ideas over it. We all kind of talk about how the structure should go. We send it to the producer, so we do pre-pro on the songs. We might cut some songs, might piece songs together. And once we all sign off on it with our producer, so I get a final song, that's when I sit down with the lyrics and I start to do demos for the producer, and then we talk about it and then record.
I'm not a musician, so I'm always curious to know, how do you know a song is done? Do you feel it? It's like an exhale, like you know it's done? Or is it a time constriction, or can you always add to it? How does that work?
You can add to it, but I mean, it all depends on what you're going for. Generally, we're looking for songs between 3 and 4 minutes. It's the normal structure we're going for. You know, and we write what we want to hear, and sometimes we've had songs where, you know, that was a little bit too long, because we're also fans of our music, so if we put it on our album and the song might feel like it drags, he's like, all right, well, the song drags. So you just kind of want to get in, have your point, you know, thrust it forward as hard as possible, and then end it strong. So
I read that back in like the 50s or whatever, maybe even earlier, that the reason songs are supposed to be 2 and 3 minutes was that's all that little tiny thing could hold.
Right.
And so now, I mean, songs could be 8 or 10 or 12 minutes.
But some bands do it great. You know, some bands do have very, very long songs, and that's a whole different way of writing. You know, if we wanted to write metal epic and just write 8, 9, 10 minute long song, you'd have to approach it differently. You know, we have kind of the you know, the Unearth formula, where it's usually an intro, the verse, pre-chorus, chorus, repeat, verse, chorus, solo or breakdown or both, then end it with something. Either it's the chorus again or outro part. You know, we kind of have a lot of the same ideas to kind of, same method to piecing together songs. But if we wanted to do a long song, then we'd have to come up with a lot of different parts that, you know, not a lot of repeating. And so that could be a challenge for the next record. This record, we wanted to write 10 songs that we could play live, and they're all, you know, digestible songs that got people fired up.
I think it's good when you have that kind of formula, but it doesn't sound like you've got a formula. Like AC/DC, to me, every song sounds the same. You know, that's...
They do what they do better than anyone.
True,
in the world.
But every song sounds the same. Slayer's getting that way too, which I hate to say because I love Slayer.
Slayer's awesome. It's a bummer they're going away.
Did you see him on this last tour?
I have not, no.
Oh man, we saw him.
We've toured together a few times. Mm. And, they're awesome guys. And amazing band. Yeah. That was my first concert as a kid.
Really?
It was a Clash of Titans, remember that one?
I do.
So it was Alice in Chains the opener. Then it was Megadeth, Slayer, and Anthrax headline in Boston. It was an unreal experience.
That's awesome. I'm older, so my first concert, I was 14, and it was Motorhead with Ozzy Osbourne with Randy Rhoads.
Oh, wow.
So it was, you can't ever top that. It changed my life forever.
That's a killer.
Yeah. For sure. I was with a friend's brother, and he was really into it, and he made a white sheet and drew the Motorhead logo, so they called us back, so I actually got to meet them when I'm 14.
Oh,
it was
wow.
Just like the most Damn. Crazy experience ever. What is the best part of touring for you?
Best part is the shows, easily. You know, I like the travel aspect. I like to see different cities. But the best part is playing the shows and the adrenaline, seeing people react to the songs that you wrote. That's the whole reason why we're here. So it's a lot of fun.
And the biggest sacrifice you make?
Being away from my kids. It's hard. It's didn't used to be this hard, but now I have 2 kids, and yeah, it's you know, my wife is awesome. She pulls down the fort, but I miss the kids like crazy.
You can Skype them every night at least or something?
We FaceTime every day, sometimes numerous times a day, and that really does help shrink the world and keep them smiling. But yeah, it's not the same as being there. But this is our career, and I'm not complaining. I enjoy it. So our touring isn't going to be as much as it used to be, because Plus and I both have kids, so we'll still tour a lot, just not the 9 months a year that we used to.
Are they old enough to know that their dads are really cool?
My son is only 11 months, so no, he doesn't think I'm cool yet. Well, no, he's awesome, he loves me. But my daughter, she finally came out to see me play, because she was always too young, and I didn't want to bring her out in that like a late-night environment. But we did the Warped Tour the summer, and so it was a day show, so she came out, always brought her, and had the big earmuffs on, and she was on stage, I sang to her on stage, and it was a really nice moment.
That's really, really sweet. So what about music, let's do this, you already kind of mentioned the band that you saw first. What was the band that made you want to be a musician, want to be a singer?
There's a few different answers to that. So when I was a little kid, my dad's into rock, you know, classic rock stuff, and he played Kiss. I remember liking it because they covered a Rolling Stones song. You know, the Stones were one of my dad's, you know, favorite bands. And they covered 2000 Man when I was a kid, and I was like, wow, this is awesome. So that was probably my first favorite band that wasn't, you know, kids' music. And so I got Dynasty, the record, and I would play air guitar and sing for my, you know, parents and aunts and uncles and stuff. So I kind of got that bug then. And then when I was 12 or 13, I think I was 12, I decided to sing along to my Testament tapes. So I really liked Chuck Billy's voice, and so I just kind of knew I had a knack for it. And then when I also saw, you know, my first concert, could have sworn Joey Belladonna pointed at me. You know, I was going to see a people, but, you know, 13-year-old kid thinks, you know, oh, he pointed at me. But just seeing that show and that level, I'm like, this is, I'd love to do this. You know what I mean? So, and then a year later, I joined my first band. So it's, I was 14, the first band. I've been going for a minute.
That's pretty awesome. That's an awesome story. I carry a Chuck Billy pick in my car.
Oh, no shit.
It's hilarious because he has a pick.
Yeah, that's funny. He has a pick.
So with the past 20 years, there's been a lot of changes in the industry that you've seen. Are there any changes that you like?
Yeah. So I didn't like when people were just stealing records. It was cool that your songs were getting out there, but the whole industry seemed to be collapsing financially. But now, with streaming, there's money that comes from that. Even if you get the services for free, the ads go in and it gets some kind of money, so it does help sustain labels and bands a bit. It's not the same as before. But what I've noticed about it is streaming has helped preserve bands' careers. Whereas when it was solely, you know, purchase-based music, bands would live and die by the support they got from the labels. So if the label didn't support the band with money, you know, for advertising, you wouldn't get the proper exposure, you wouldn't get the right tours. And so a lot of these 2 to 5 year trends would come. You see a band, oh, whatever happened to that band? Because their support dropped out. But now with the streaming services, as long as the band tours and does their work on the social media accounts, and does have some help from labels, you can prolong your career. So I've noticed bands having longer and longer careers, and some bands having a resurgence because music is out there, it's everywhere. So if you write a good record, before it might have been buried. But now, you know, the word can spread easily now. So that's a benefit of streaming services.
That's a good answer. I know it's so hard, especially with what I do. I'm so saturated with new bands that I can't even get to the point of really liking something unless it's immediate. But like getmetal.org, I mean, I go through that once a week and then YouTube it real quick, and if I like it, I buy it. If you weren't doing this, what do you think you'd do?
I'd like to be involved in music some way, like a manager or booking agent. I've tried my hand at a record label owner for a couple of times. One of them lasted 10 years. It's called Ironclad Recordings. And I had some decent success with that. But then I hit a bunch of roadblocks, and it got to a point where I was putting out releases and the bands weren't getting to the success point that I wanted them to, that I was hoping to get them. So I'd rather bands sign with bigger labels until I could actually focus on them all. So I'm pushing my project, so if I can't get a band to that next level, then I don't want to punish the bands, you know, because I'm a one-man project. So if it got bigger where I had a staff, it'd be a bit different.
What's your wish for Unearth for the rest of this year in 2019?
To get bigger than Metallica. But in all seriousness, I mean, just continue growing. You know, the reaction to this record is solid. So we want it's just to create more opportunities and a tour and get the best tours and have as many people hear the record as possible.
Is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
Check out the record. It's one that we're really proud of. It could be one of the best in our catalog. We feel like it has a lot to offer fans and, you know, old and new and everywhere in between. So hopefully check it out. Extinctions is out now.
Have a good show.
Thank you.